Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Slapcast. I'm your host, Gage, as usual, and this is another episode of our coverage of the 2022-23 season. We're excited that you were able to join us this week as we journey down the rabbit hole of Premier League events, including, but not limited to, dodgy refereeing at Spurs, Arsenal dropping points, albeit in a very exciting way, Leicester in complete shambles, sorry, Josh, and quite fittingly, on day of recording Easter Sunday, the resurrection of Crystal Palace under the finest iteration of Roy Ball that we have yet seen. Now then, it would only be right for me to start our introductions with the man who rejoins us after his absence last week. I am, of course, talking about Rhys. It's good to have you back, Rhys.
Good to be back. I did actually listen to last week's episode, unlike Josh, who hates us and doesn't listen when he's not on.
I'm pretty sure I said on the episode, Rhys will not listen to this. But so yeah, cheers to you for actually listening. Fuck you, Josh. Okay. Next up, it's Ethan. Welcome back, Ethan.
Good to be back. I'm excited to have this podcast today.
Yeah, the much awaited return of Crystal Palace winning. Mm-hmm. And of course, we also have Josh. Josh, how was your weekend at home?
Fuck you. It was good. How was your week in Lubbock?
My week in Lubbock was really good, actually. Yeah, I was traveling for work, and I really enjoyed being there. So, good. Yeah, it was nice. So, all right, I must now transition as we prepare to feast our minds on what is undoubtedly the most thought-provoking question in the history of humankind. So, Josh, please tell me that you have concocted some variety of question that will invigorate us.
What'd y'all have for Easter dinner?
Oh, my God.
I had this thing called Chip Chop Ham. It's one of the guys who we do Easter with makes it every year. It's the reason I go. It's like this sweet ham, like that's chopped up, chip chop. Stuck it in some homemade rolls. Had a couple deviled eggs, both dill and sweet. Had some hash brown casserole. And I had a lot of alcohol.
Yeah.
I'll go next because mine's not too exciting. So I went to service and we didn't go out to eat because my dad has a fever. So fortunately we couldn't go eat. And then I had to go take grad pics. So the only thing I've had to eat today was Whataburger with Rhys.
I did not really have a bona fide Easter dinner, but my parents and grandparents came out to my apartment yesterday and we ordered burgers from this local place called Rodeo Goat, which is really good. There are locations all around the Metroplex. Yeah. So I'm sure you guys might've heard of it, but I had the Chaka Oaxaca, which is a spicy burger with a fried egg, avocado and bacon with pimento cheese.
I'm a fan of eggs on burgers.
Yeah, I am too.
I am sometimes. I got to be in the right mood for it.
Yeah, I wouldn't get it every time, but I do really enjoy an egg on a burger. Yeah, and avocado on a burger goes crazy too. So I'm a fan of that particular menu item.
I had my future mother-in-law sent me home with a honey-baked ham and turkey. I had that and a salad for dinner.
So there you go.
By myself. Very eventful.
It is the way it is. All right. Let's continue on and leave behind Easter Sunday, just as Jesus left behind the tomb. and we will continue on to our Premier League matches this week. We're going to start with the matches that occurred today, as they are probably the most interesting of the weekend's fixtures. And Ethan, I think it's so long overdue that we have to start with you because Roy is apparently the solution to all of Crystal Palace's problems. So how does that make you feel overall?
Well, let me first start off my ramblings talking about something that is way overdue. And I had to print this out beforehand. It is a Jordan Ayew apology form. So it basically says, the reasons for behavior. And I checked off, the media convinced me he was done. I only looked at advanced analytics. I was jealous of the god IU. It said, this one says, I didn't watch the games, but I did. I have suffered long and hard through this tenure. I put a question mark next to I don't know football, because apparently I don't, or I thought I did. And then next to it, under that, it says, I'm an idiot, with a question mark and an exclamation mark. And then I check mark the I will hereby respect Jordan IU and will not talk down on the future Ballon d'Or winner. I say this because we've had to deal with another Zaha injury, and IU has stepped into his role and scored two today against Leeds. And I got to say, I'm on cloud nine right now, because, you know, we've had a rough couple games over the past few months of 2023, and it's been hard to it's been a hard watch. I've struggled watching us, and it's taken a toll on me mentally. But today was kind of the reawakening. If the Leicester one wasn't, it was this one. And I was just so impressed by how we came out in the second half and attacked. And I think it really shows that we have like so much to work with. And you really got to ask the question of how good of a manager Vieira was, to the fact that Roy has literally got these players scoring five when we couldn't really score one. So it's interesting. So yeah, I also should fill out a form for Roy Hodgson, apparently, because the fact that we have immediately gotten more points than Vieira has in 2023 is insane. So it's been kind of a revelation, and it was a joyous watch today. Immediately after the game, I was getting emotional, because I was like, I had missed out on this feeling so much. I was popping off, and, you know, as he scored, and I even hit the gritty at one point, and that's how excited I was. And then when Edouard scored the fourth, I was like battle crying. Like, it was just something I hadn't seen in a while. I was kind of like a primal awakening. So it was a great, great day, and it pushes us closer away from the relegation zone, and, you know, knocks down one of the other teams that was down there.
Has Roy gone through some kind of revelation, or is this new manager bounce and he's going to field Rita Wild at striker in a couple of weeks?
You know, it's kind of hard to tell. It's kind of hard to tell, because, you know, it really could be new manager bounce, because, you know, we kind of just needed a change of pace. But, you know, I thought Roy did very good for the players he had in his last season. So the fact that he's got all these players to work with now is kind of maybe, you know, showing how well of a good manager he actually is, because they're all looking great. And these are, and I thought the commentator made a good point that these young players that we have are prone to mistakes. You know, they're still getting used to being regulars in the Premier League, but when they are on their day, they're electric. So it is amazing what we can do when we're confident and playing out our best.
I will say, now that Roy's back, it just feels right. I don't know. Roy, yeah, and Crystal Palace are very synonymous in my mind.
Mm. Right.
One thing I have noticed is that it seems like the players really enjoy playing for him.
Yeah.
So even at the end of his last tenure, maybe, you know, the football wasn't the best and the results weren't the best either, but it seems like the players really enjoy working under him. So I think there's definitely something to be said about that as well.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I talked about it a long time ago with, you know, though Vieira might not have as much experience, you know, he brings a certain expertise to, you know, winning big trophies and, you know, he's like someone that the players who are young now can like look up to, because he was playing when they were growing up. But Roy brings the experience. He might not have much trophies to back it, but he knows what style he wants to do, and he knows how to work with players and how to manage games. So you know, I thought it was a weird appointment, but it's working out really well right now.
Have you noticed anything that's like tangibly different that he's bringing to the table than what was happening under Vieira, or do you think it's just purely a kind of atmospheric change?
You know, it is kind of hard to tell, because it's like there, you feel like, you know, stuff that we've done with under Vieira, you know, might seem the same under Roy now. But I think, honestly, I think we're just more confident in how we play football, because, you know, we're not committing as much fouls. One thing I've noticed particularly was how Cheick Doucouré has played under Roy, because, you know, before this game under Vieira, he had about 8, or it was 9 yellow cards. So he almost had 10. And in the past two games, he hasn't had a yellow card. So I think we're just remaining composed and confident, and more confident in our ability to go forward.
All right.
I did just want to mention one more thing. Sam Johnston came in for his first Premier League start with us, and he was great. He made a lot of shot stops in the first half because, you know, Leeds, you know, that's when they controlled the game, was in the first half. And he was great. Guaita has had an injury problem again. And so I think Sam Johnston is someone good to have playing right now. And with Guaita possibly coming back soon, you know, I think Sam Johnston could still offer competition in that position.
What I was going to say is a special shout out to Michael Olise, who, despite not scoring a goal, provided a hat trick of assists and earned man of the match. So
he's special.
Yeah, special player. Okay, let's leave behind one good result for a Slap team and come on to what I think Reese has already stated is probably a good result for another Slap team as well. Going to Anfield, even in a struggling season as it is never an easy task. And Arsenal have done it and come away with a point. So, and kind of had to survive an onslaught late on as well. Pretty much the whole second half, I feel like, was Liverpool dominated, and Arsenal did a good job of staving that off. So, Reese, kind of take us through the events.
Yeah, so I wanted to start with a couple of stats. So I believe at Anfield, Liverpool got points at City. I can't remember if they won or if they drew that game. But they did get points against City at Anfield. They put 7 past United at Anfield. And to top it all off, we have not won at Anfield for over a decade. Last time was in 2012. Mikel Arteta started. So I was not really expecting to win this game. I was hopeful, especially 2-0 up. But even the way it happened with a comeback draw, I'm still very happy with the points because, you know, we're still 6 ahead, although we've played an extra game. But if we assume City wins that game, we're 3 ahead. So the reality of it hasn't really changed. We still need to get points against City. Actually, we don't even really need to. If we don't drop points, except for the City game, we'd still end up beating them, I believe.
I think you'd be tied on points.
We'd be
if
tied.
They beat you,
then and they definitely will beat us on goal difference. They'll definitely win on goal difference. So, but yeah, I mean, it's basically the same reality as it was before, because if whoever wins that game is going to have the momentum, pretty much. The events of the game. So we start off pretty similarly to the first game against Liverpool. Martinelli scores extremely early on. I believe this one was in the 7th-ish minute, maybe 8th. Last time it was in less than a minute that he scored. But yeah, it was a great goal. It was just a really good move from Saka to dribble in, and a lucky bounce that fell to Martinelli, but then he did some really close control and kind of toe-poked it past Alisson. And then soon after that, you know, to top it off on Easter, Jesus has risen. He rises up for the header, puts it in. And yeah, it's good to see him playing again. Good to see him scoring too. So I was really happy about that. I'll tell you, the inciting incident that caused Liverpool's onslaught to occur was pretty close to right before halftime. Xhaka made an error, not in the game, but in man management, because he decided to rile up Trent Alexander-Arnold, I think to get him a yellow, because they both went away with yellows. However, you do not want to get the crowd involved at Anfield. And at this point in the game, almost halftime, we're winning 2-0. Anfield crowd were dead. Like, they were dead, which is what you want. It was all Arsenal fans. It's all you could hear. Xhaka riles them up. The fans get super loud and super behind the players. And then from then that point on, you know, it's just impossible at Anfield. When all the fans are against you in that, I mean, it's a big stadium, but relative to some of the other top 6 teams, it's still smaller in size. So it's very close proximity to the players. It's just like unplayable atmosphere. And I mean, Arteta kind of got some slack about it in the documentary when, you know, he was out there with the speaker. But I think the intention is definitely, I understand, because like playing in that atmosphere is what decides the game. And we saw it as soon as the fans got behind the players. Because Liverpool is just, like Gage was saying, it was just survive for the next 45 minutes. And I mean, we conceded 2. They were decent goals. I mean, wasn't really anything we could do about it. Ramsdale, man, absolutely massive, especially towards the end of this game, made two or three very impressive and very important saves to secure a point for us. The other very notable incident in this game was that Liverpool did have a penalty that would have put it, I think 3-2. I think it was after.
No, it was, I think it was, second, I thought it was 2-2 because they scored the second one way late on, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. It would have made it 2-2. And he missed. He just missed the goal straight up.
Yeah, of course, that prick would pick this game of all games to miss a penalty.
To be fair, he also picked last game that he had a penalty to miss a
penalty. Did he? So. I didn't know he missed his last penalty.
He did, yeah.
He is 0 for 2 in his last two. I did feel a little bit like it was ball doesn't lie. I don't know if I'd go as far to say it shouldn't have been a penalty, but it was extremely soft. Like, Holding didn't actually put in a challenge. He was just running. And, you know, there was a bunch of bodies in the box, and him moving just kind of got their legs tangled and they both fell. So it's like, yeah, it's a penalty. It's just so unfortunate. And I mean, I'll just, since it wasn't scored, I don't have to complain about it, is the good thing. If it had gone in, maybe I'd be more upset. But yeah, it was just kind of a Holding was just trying to get to the ball, not even get the ball, get to the ball. And it was just a tangling. I thought Holding as a whole was great. I think that was the main takeaway from this game. Getting a point was huge, but this was kind of the litmus test for Holding, because he did well in the Leeds game, but, you know, it's Leeds. They've not been particularly great recently. So really we wanted to see how he would do away at Anfield. And I thought he was pretty much faultless besides the penalty, but I don't really know how much of that is his fault, to be honest. So I think with the remaining fixtures, I'm much more hopeful having Holding, because really, I mean, I think we still have Chelsea remaining, although they're crap. And I think it's at home as well. We have Newcastle, but I think it might be at home. I don't remember, but that'll be a tough game. And then we have City, but City have the exact same fixtures. Actually, they have us, they have Newcastle, they have Chelsea. So yeah, I'm pretty optimistic going into the final stretch of games.
Yeah. Now last week when you weren't here, I famously said that if y'all won this game at Anfield, I would officially consider the title race over. Of course, a draw puts you kind of one foot in that camp in terms of, you know, 3 points is obviously a lot better than one. Great analysis by me, but I think this still just kind of leaves the door barely cracked open for City, I think.
Yeah, so, it's definitely on, because if they beat us, it's really the game against us. If they win, they're going to be ahead on goal difference for sure, because Haaland's scoring 4 every other game. So
yeah,
we really need it to not get to that point. Although I'll also say I'm not really that confident. I know they're in great form right now, but City have shown that they're going to drop points at random games. So I think it could still happen. I think they could. I mean, they've got Newcastle. They could drop points to Newcastle. So could we. But, you know, it's just it's a real possibility. So it's going to have to be one game at a time for sure. But I think although the door's still open, you would always want to be in first as opposed
to of course,
second with the momentum, right? So.
Yeah, and I also think, like, I think you're absolutely right. I guarantee between now and the end of the season, City will drop points in a random game. Like, there will be a random game where they draw or lose to someone that they shouldn't. Yeah. And now it just comes down to whether they do the same or whether Arsenal can stave off that particular affliction.
So. Yeah. I think luckily this game's not going to be too bad for the mental, because I think although they'll be a little upset today because they did drop points because we were leading, right? I think, honestly, by tomorrow, the players will probably be over it. Because a point at Anfield is a point at Anfield. Like, you'll take it every day of the week.
No, yeah, 100%. I don't think this kills any type of mentality at all. I think it's a perfect... Because going into the game, if you'd said, all right, 2-2 at Anfield, you'll take that all day. Yeah. So I don't think it's an issue for any type of momentum or mentality. So
man, we almost got one right at the end. I thought it was going to be the moment. We had a two
against
one. I would
have smashed every breakable item in my house.
Or no, we had a three against one, and Martinelli just overhit the pass to Saka barely, and Allison was the sweeper and got it away. But, man, I thought it was it. I could taste it.
All right, do you have any final thoughts on this game or just on the title race in general?
No, I mean, I think that's pretty much it. I think a draw definitely deserved. I think let me check our next game, actually. It's West Ham. They're crap.
Yeah, they are crap.
So, and then Southampton. So, come on.
Who are also crap.
And then City. So, presumably, and I'll knock on wood when I say this, presumably we'll be going to the City game two wins in a row.
How do you reverse knock on wood? I need to. I'm gonna remove my knocks from this wood and hope that you lose both of those games.
I'm trying to find what City's next fixtures are.
They have us this weekend.
Okay, so
it's yeah Leicester. Oh well, actually, their next they have Bayern in the Champions League, and then Leicester, and then Bayern again.
Okay,
and then they would have had Brighton, but they have the FA Cup semifinal against Sheffield United. So their next two Premier League games are actually Leicester and Arsenal.
Gotcha. So, yeah, that's another thing to note is that we have considerably less games than them because we're right in two less competitions. So, yeah, going into that City game, we could be doing better on the mental front for sure.
They already have one game in hand that's been rescheduled, and they're going to have another because this Brighton game is postponed. So they're going to squeeze more Premier League fixtures into the end of the season as well, which they do have a big squad, but more games is always worse at this time of the season, I feel. So, yeah, that's something important to keep in mind. All right. I think unless you would like to stop me once again, I'm going to move forward to the other side of North London, which is the affair at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium against Brighton. And now I'm going to come out and say this. This is officially the worst refereeing performance I've ever seen in a game of football, and it benefited Spurs to the maximum. This is an absolute disgrace of officiating. I think, Reese, you sent something. I think it was in the text chat about.
Yeah, they've you know how they do the statements after games, like this is how many mistakes we made. They made five.
Yeah. And honestly, I think there were more mistakes than that, but just they weren't big enough to warrant being said. So the for me, the worst one. Okay, let me back up. Hold on. I'll paint the picture of the game first of all, because before the game, there was this really weird confrontation in the tunnels between Stellini and Roberto De Zerbi. They come out of the tunnels and they like kind of shake hands. And then I don't know what was said. I don't think we have any confirmed reports of what was said, but De Zerbi like turns around and starts jamming his finger at Stellini like this. And they're having this big argument, blah, blah, whatever. Okay. They separate. And this was before kickoff even. So they separate, game begins. And right from the off, it's a chippy game, like tackles flying in at all angles. So you could tell whatever happened, I think, riled up both sides because there was a lot of action, lots of full-blooded tackles from both sides. And then in the first 10 minutes, Sun Heung-min scores an absolutely vintage curler from the edge of the box for his 100th Premier League goal. So welcome to the 100th club. And
Ethan was saying to me, he scores that exact goal.
He does.
It's like randomly once a month. Like
it is. Yeah. I think like 20 of his Premier League goals have looked exactly like that. It's crazy how he just is able to do that so consistently. So yeah, that goal goes in. Not a whole lot happens from that point onward. And then Brighton have a corner, which Lewis Dunk rises high and is able to nod in. Some more questionable behavior from Hugo Lloris, who's back from injury and behaving questionably generally, as he does. So I think, first of all, I kind of think Fraser Forster should have kept his place because I thought he played pretty well, actually. But second of all, just reinforces the fact that we need a new goalkeeper in the summer. Anyway, after this, Brighton immediately looked to have taken the lead because a through ball is played over the top. Mitoma takes it down nicely and slots into the corner. VAR check comes up on the screen, checking possible handball, which I'll be honest, in the pub when we saw that go in, like nobody said anything. Like it was like, oh yeah, just good play by Matoma, whatever. Comes to VAR and you see they're really scrutinizing this. The ball's coming towards him and his arm is like sort of outstretched like this to maintain his balance because he's about to take a touch, right? The ball hits him like here, which is supposed to be legal. Because I thought the new rule was shirt sleeve, right? It's like if it hits your shirt sleeve, that's legal. If it hits down here, that's a different story. But so it hits him like right on the edge of his shirt sleeve. And I mean, for me, I thought it was a legal goal, but VAR decides to overrule it for whatever reason.
I'm pretty sure they think it is after the fact, because I think that was one of the mistakes that they said.
Yeah. I mean, I can kind of see like the optics of it isn't great because he's sticking his arm out, right? So it's like the arm's not in a natural position, but I think if his arm was like this, it still would have hit him. So yeah. I don't really, you know, it's kind of like,
That's why the rule exists, is because right. If it's shirt sleeve, it's pretty much going to be the same whether or not your arm's raised.
Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't understand that. So I was like, okay, phew, you know, Spurs are off. Another let off for Spurs. I'm trying to think of which incident was next. I think it was the Welbeck goal that got disallowed. So we've now reached the second half. So Brighton are playing some nice possession football. Spurs are kind of tucked in defending. Brighton are playing kind of around the D, passing, you know, sideways passing. And then someone decides to take a shot. I can't remember who takes the actual shot. And it deflects. So Danny Welbeck is standing in the box, kind of turned like perpendicular to the goal. And he has his arm against his chest. The ball comes, hits him here on the arm, and then deflects into the net past Lloris. Another questionable piece of behavior by Lloris. Should have saved it. And they disallow this goal too, which
is crazy.
It is crazy.
Because his arm is tucked in.
Yeah, his arm's literally against his chest. Like, I don't think he could have had it any further away from an unnatural position. And for some reason, they disallow it for handball again. And I think, like, there is that rule that states, like, if you can't score directly from your hand, because you remember a few years ago, I think Aguero scored against Arsenal.
Yeah.
And it went in directly off his arm. But that one was like his arm was extended out.
Yeah.
And it went in off of his arm. And this one, like, I mean, what is he supposed to do? Like, legitimately, what's he supposed to do? You know, he's trying to get out of the way of the ball and it just happens to hit him because it was a terrible strike. And he wasn't offside. So I don't really know what the point of disallowing that goal is either. Some bizarre behavior. Then comes the double red card for the managers. Again, something gets said. I don't know what. Probably, I think they were arguing about this decision, but it wasn't Christian Stellini. It was some other of the random coaches on Spurs staff that were in the technical area, you know, kind of mouthing off at Brighton staff, right? And then De Zerbi comes across and he's doing this number again, doing whatever, talking to all the Spurs staff. Stellini is like 20 miles the other side of the technical area talking to someone else. And they show this shot of like all this carnage happening in the technical area. And Stellini's like not even in the frame. Like you can barely see him outside the frame. Referee comes over, awards a red card to De Zerbi. And of course all the pub is going, yeah, like fuck you, you know, wanker and all that. And then he goes, he crosses the melee, finds Stellini and gives him a red card. It was completely bizarre. I don't understand how he managed to get a red card for minding his own business. I think the official ruling stated that like both managers received a red for failing to control their technical area. But what? Like, since when has that been a rule? I don't know. Whatever. So not a big deal. You know, managers get sent off all the time. So it's not that big of a deal, right? But it's just something that makes me laugh again.
Adds to the list of weird refereeing decisions
about the game. Yeah. And I didn't even think De Zerbi necessarily deserved a red either. Like all members of staff were engaged, you know, it wasn't like he was specifically being a shithead. It's just like they all were. So I guess he just had to bite the bullet for it. I don't know. But then I don't know, maybe 20 minutes or so pass. We're talking 75th minute-ish now. And Kaoru Mitoma, again, is involved. Is trying to take a ball down in the box, and Højbjerg basically just studs up, whacks him right in the foot, and he goes over. I mean, it was like not like miles from the ball, nowhere near anything. Like, it's just a penalty. It is, right? It's like there's no question about it. And VAR looks at it for literally 3.2 seconds and decides that it's not worth checking anymore. And they move on with it. I could not believe, again, in the pub, we could not believe that that went against them. And then, of course, just to add insult to injury to Brighton, Spurs break up the other way. Højbjerg lays it off to Kane, who scores the winner. I mean, if I was a Brighton fan, I would be on here screaming, crying, throwing up about corruption, you know, top six benefit, blah, 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 all that. That's what I would be screaming about. I don't know what else to say. 3 points undeserved, but I mean, I'll take them. Of course I'll take them, but I don't know what else to say. I don't think we learned anything about Spurs because they were crap and they didn't deserve to win. But they did for some reason. So there you go. That's it. That's all I have. I don't know what else to say.
Kind of moving away from the game and looking at the table. Yeah. Y'all are in fifth, correct?
Correct. With a game
Fewer than both of the teams ahead of y'all. You've played a game more.
Yeah, okay. I knew what you were saying. Fewer games remaining. But yes. Yeah.
How do you continue? Because you're 3 points behind both Newcastle and United. I agreed with you when you said it the first time, when you said you thought Newcastle were fake. Yeah. I am now going to say I don't think they're fake anymore. I think they're real. So how do you proceed? Because I don't know. Do you have games against either of them?
So actually, this will go in to answer your question. There is a week, and I mean a week, like a 7-day period where we have Newcastle on the Saturday, Liverpool on the Wednesday, United on the Saturday. So that is the period that will define the season pretty much, because if you can win two of those, you're probably looking at a top four finish.
Yeah.
If you pretty much anything less than that, I think you're out. So I think, because honestly, with the way things have gone this season, I could see Liverpool, Newcastle and Spurs dropping a similar number of points in the other fixtures. Newcastle, I agree. I don't think they're fake anymore, especially after this most recent resurgence, but they do have a drop point in them. United are wildly inconsistent, so you never know what's going to happen with that. And Rashford's out, and Spurs are Spurs. So I think I could foresee all three of those clubs dropping a similar number of points. So really it just comes down to that week right there is going to define where Spurs are going to finish essentially. And do I back us to win those games? Absolutely not. So that could just tell you where I'm at in terms of confidence for the season. Because, well, last podcast, we hadn't actually played against Everton yet, which was another farcical game. It was probably better that we hadn't played it yet when we started talking. So I've now seen two games under Christian Stellini. And what I can confidently tell you is that we killed the man, but not the idea. Because nothing has changed. And
is
I mean
he
nothing.
Like pretty much for sure staying till the end of the season? Or are y'all looking for a guy right now?
Well, the statement said that he will be in place until the end of the season, but it is reported in journalists and, you know, around the club that we are searching, but there is also this matter of our sporting director is banned from participating in sporting activities, which is kind of a problem, and will most likely also, he's facing criminal trial later this month. So, you know, they did just appoint a guy called Scott Munn, who I know nothing about. Apparently he used to work in the Australian FA, but they just appointed him as Daniel Levy's second in command. I don't know what his official title is. It's something ridiculous like club operator of footballing duties and logistics or something like that. But he's allegedly going to be Daniel Levy's new second in command. So what I don't know is, if that's a replacement for Fabio Paratici or if that's someone else to go into the hierarchy. Because I think legally, maybe, and I think this may be why they haven't let Paratici go. I think legally, if you fire someone in the middle of their trial process, I think you open up a can of worms because technically he's innocent until proven guilty in a criminal sense, right?
Yeah.
But so I don't know. The optics of it just suck. Basically, the optics of everything Spurs are doing right now sucks. But we won a game, so woohoo. So, yeah, as far as how do we proceed, I honestly have no idea. I'm just ready for this season to be over. At this point, I don't really even care if we finish in the top four. I'm just so ready for this season to be over. Feels like one of the longest, most, like, it's one of the seasons that's worn down on me the most from an emotional perspective. So I'm just ready for that to end. Unless anyone has any additional thoughts on Spurs, I'd say we move on to maybe the one person who is more miserable than me at the moment on the podcast. Josh, things are not looking great for Leicester at the moment.
No, we've had 8 points since the World Cup. And in the last two weeks, we've lost 3 points from all three games because we have had like just irresponsible passing. Like against Palace, we gave the ball away, which gave up the winner. We shouldn't have won that game, but we still like defended well enough in the attacking third and blocked enough shots to where it wasn't as much of an issue. I mean, 30 shots and only 8 on target is somehow impressive. And then Villa and Didi just passes it, and a worldie gets scored. And then James Maddison passes it right to Philip Billings, who we made look like a superstar because we would just randomly pass the ball to him in the entire game. And the fans have turned James Maddison, the fans harassed him so much on Twitter that his Twitter is no longer a thing.
I heard it was also I'm not saying they're completely in the wrong for this because, you know, you're dropping points to Bournemouth. But I know I heard something on Twitter that when that happened, some of the chants were really bad. It was like along the lines of like, you don't deserve to wear the shirt, blah, blah, blah.
I mean, they don't. This team.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I don't necessarily disagree, but.
You know. I mean, we finished fourth. Or we finished fifth and we're in fourth for a majority of the season, like the last two seasons, I can't even keep track of it anymore. Recently, we've almost finished in the Champions League, and largely the squad is exactly the same.
Yeah.
We should not be in 19th in our second spell of the relegation zone of the season because we can't – we've gone on a 6-game losing streak. It's the first time in our history that we've lost 5 straight home games. And – the only slimmer of hope I have is Jesse Marsh actually organizing the press, because when we have an organized press, we actually look decent. It's when only one person goes forward that our press looks awful.
I don't want to be the bearer of bad news, but I'm pretty sure the Jesse Marsh deal fell apart.
Like right now?
Here's this tweet from Fabrizio. The appointment of Jesse Marsh as new Leicester coach is now on the verge of collapsing. No agreement on final points after the negotiation in the last 3 days. Jesse not fully convinced. He's not accepting the job despite talks were advanced.
Well, there we go. I don't know what's going to happen. I have a feeling that Gage asked last week if I thought we were going to get relegated. And I said there was like a 40% chance. I think it's after the Villa and this game, I would say it's at like a 75.
Yeah, it does not look good. I'm always rooting for Leicester unless they play against us. But there's a lot of Arsenal fans are the receipt holders. And I'm just around Arsenal's Twitter sphere, and I've been seeing that image that I think either the Premier League posted or NBC or somebody from back when y'all were doing really well. That was like this image, and it was like the new top six, and like Arsenal's crossed out, and it's like Leicester and are all like, this is not aged particularly well.
Yeah.
And the thing I noticed, and you know, this is, you were talking about it and complaining about it earlier, and I'm just like, it's happening every game. It's the fact that y'all turn over the ball so much. And then when you do have the ball, you send it long every time, which always leads into turnover.
And then Iverson's distribution has been awful. It's just like, we're not helping ourselves. Like, for the majority of the games, we're not bad. It's when we give the ball away carelessly, like, just, it looks like a League Two team just who doesn't know how to actually play fundamentally sound soccer.
Right now, y'all definitely just kind of need a coach. But, like, I really don't know what they can improve on.
Yeah, because right now we have two coaches, and they've both been at the club for, like, years. The only bright side, in 9 years ago at this, during, in match week 30, we were in 20th, so it could be worse. And we did not get relegated. So, but on,
and then
but
you won the league. So you're winning the league next season is what I'm hearing.
I hope so. I think we might be winning a league, but I don't think it's going to be this one. But also, like, in all seriousness, if we get relegated, I think it's going to be a very, very – it might be Sunderland-esque just because our wage bill is so high, and I don't know how many players we'll actually be able to keep, because the only ones who have relegation wage clauses are the two we signed in the winter.
Yeah.
Everyone else, that was not a thought – 2 years ago, because it shouldn't have had to be a thought, but here we are.
Yeah, and I know the chances have risen for y'all to be relegated. I still think there's a little bit of hope that, like, some teams are going to drop off. It's hard to believe that now, because obviously it hasn't been a great run of form, but, you know, it's been off and on. I know for a while we struggled with form, but now we're looking good, so hopefully y'all can bring in a coach and get some games going, and hopefully one of these other teams drop off. Because this last game week was a huge one for the relegation battle.
Yes, it finally, like, spread it out a little bit. Like, we, like, if we had won this week, I think we would have jumped,
like, 14th or something.
Yeah, I think, like,
you would have gone to the game 50, week.
Yeah, like, beginning 16th. Of the game week, we could have jumped up to, like, there. We could still have jumped to 13th if, like, things, every result had gone our way. But now we have City at the weekend. Even if we somehow get a draw, we'd still be in the relegation zone. And then we have Leeds and Wolves, or we have Wolves, then Leeds after, which are two really important. If we win against either of them, hopefully we'll be out of the relegation zone, but we will see.
Leeds could be the ones to fall, because I was reading something today. It was it might have been from John Mueller, maybe, can't remember. It was basically comparing projected points from when Jesse Marsh left to Javi Gracia now. Mm-hmm. And Jesse Marsh had more projected points than Javi Gracia does now. So that is something that's worth noting. They're on a downward trend for sure.
There's a shot. We have to win all the games against the teams close to us, and given our current form, that is. So we haven't won since we played Tottenham.
Who do you have around y'all from now to the end of the season?
Well, we have Wolves and Leeds.
Everton.
I haven't really looked
at it. Everton's huge, because they are.
And then the last day is West Ham.
Yes, the last day is West Ham.
Got a couple hard fixtures in there. You play Fulham, Liverpool, and Newcastle.
Yeah, which is going to suck. Because the two times we played Newcastle, we played them like 3 days apart, and it was awful both times. But yeah, it's not looking great.
Let's do this again, just because I think it's fun. Let's pick another three who we think are going to go down.
Okay. Southampton, I think I'm going to nail.
I think we probably all have got Southampton nailed on, surely.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll put Southampton 20th collectively.
Southampton, Leicester, Leeds.
I unfortunately think I'm going to agree with Josh.
I mean, I just don't like to pick Leicester to go down. Just
I don't either.
But it would probably be, I'm going to say it would probably be Southampton, Forest, and then Leicester. I'm going to say that Leicester go above Forest.
I'm going to say Southampton, Forest, and Leeds, actually. I still believe that Leicester are a better team than some of the other teams. I definitely think you're better than Forest. I mean, I think...
I agree, but we haven't beat them this season. Or we've beat them once.
No, I get that. But I'm just saying relative to... Not necessarily better relative to each other, but just relative to your ability to get points off other teams. Like,
we've had three separate 4+ game losing streaks this season. I know you've said that like every podcast, but it has not been proven true because we keep having these massive losing streaks.
I know. And I know it's like, yeah, I mean, look, I'm not going to lie. It's a tough outlook for Leicester. And I really do think, I mean, I think your assessment about there being a 75% chance of them going down is probably true, but I just feel like some teams just feel like they're institutionalized in the Premier League and they can't go down. And for some reason, I feel like that's true with Leicester. Although I used to feel like that with Southampton too, and they're clearly going to go down.
We also said that with Stoke before they also have been, and they've been in the championship for 5 years.
True. 6 years. But, and B, again, I just think there are players on Leicester who are capable of being bigger difference makers than there are on Forest or Leeds or Bournemouth, for that matter, or Everton. So, I just for those reasons, I think Leicester will finish 17th.
I hope so. But
that would be nice. That Leeds-Leicester game is going to be really huge.
It's huge.
Because they're struggling right now, but so are Leicester. So, it's just going to be which team wants it more.
Yeah, I have to go out to the field this weekend, so I won't be able to watch the City game. So
That's probably a good thing.
Probably a good thing.
Probably means there's a shot we'll get some sort of points just based on luck.
If y'all beat City, you cannot watch a single game for the rest of the season.
I might not. Maybe I'll just start working Saturdays. I don't know.
If y'all beat City, I will kiss you on the mouth.
Over the past few years, us and Tottenham have had some of the best track records against City.
That is true. And Palace, weirdly. The slap clubs, except Arsenal, are really good against City.
But yeah, so that's where we're at. The Flyers are also awful. Basically, every team is awful that I enjoy watching.
Buddy, the Flyers, don't even talk about the Flyers might be the biggest joke franchise in the NHL right now. I feel bad for you, dude.
We're so bad at tanking. We can't tank. And I love it, but I hate it. I love that we're not trying to tank just because, like, how I view it, but also, like, come on. Robbed of a top three pick last season, and all top three picks are going to be decent NHL players. Everywhere
decent,
yes.
Connor Bedard might be the greatest player in NHL history. Oh, I was gonna say
because we were third, and then we got bumped down to fifth because we got jumped by Arizona and New Jersey last season.
Oh yeah,
and now
I think y'all should be trying to get Bedarded because
I agree. But
let's get Bedarded in here, dude, because he is gonna end up being one of the greatest NHL players of all time.
Yes.
But anyway.
His team is so bad around him. They were an 8 seed and they upset the number 1 seed. And he's averaged like 3.5 points a game in this series.
He scored more goals this season He scored more. Oh my God, my AirPods messed up. He scored more points this season in junior than Gretzky ever did. So that should just tell you something. Gretzky played junior in the 70s. So. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, this is not an NHL podcast, although I do want to have a little segment at the end. Josh, you might not be done talking about Leicester. I don't know. Do you have anything else?
No, that's a good starting point.
Okay. Now, listeners, let's turn our attention to the Molyneux, where we can all point and laugh at this absolute sack of shit that is Chelsea Football Club. They have yet again Lampard's tricky blues have once again managed to pull off
Lampard. What happened since the last podcast? Can I go back in time? What year is this?
Dude, Oh my God. Just they're okay. Hold on. Club. I want to point out that the goal that Mateus Nunez scored against Chelsea is a absolute hood certified banger. Okay. That's all about Wolves. Chelsea. Such a joke club that they've gone back to the guy that they decided was not fit to be a manager to lead them for the rest of the season. And he's guided them to a strong 11th, which is just really hilarious, honestly.
Lester, Josh, y'all should be praying on Chelsea's downfall because they really could make it down there.
I don't know. They beat us 3-1. That was bad.
That's tough. That was their only win in the last however long or something. Which is really unfortunate, but you know what I think is hilarious, that they are so bad and yet they still technically could win the Champions League.
That would be crazy.
I don't think they will because they have Real Madrid, but
I actually, honestly, it would be kind of funny.
I'm just saying when they won it in 2012, they did it under an interim manager too. So it's not impossible. Like it's, you know, it could happen.
Who, if Chelsea beat Real Madrid, they also have to go against City or Bayern.
They beat City last time.
I guess. But Pep's done with the league, didn't you know?
Yeah.
I want to read this stat that was posted by the official Premier League Twitter account.
Oh, my God.
So the awesome. Admin is taking the piss, dude, because this is a hilarious tweet. No Chelsea FC player has been directly involved in more Premier League away goals this season than Enzo Fernandez. 2 assists. The Argentinian made his first away appearance in February.
Whoa, 2.
A reply from the Specsavers admin, shout out to Specsavers, said eye-watering numbers. I mean, truly, just really, how does he do it? 2 contributions is the most away goal contributions at Chelsea this season.
You know how I always say I could score a goal in the Prem? I think stick me in the Chelsea side and I'm going to have the most away goal contributions.
I don't think anyone could score in that Chelsea team.
I really just think it's incredible that the Premier League admin thought they needed to tweet that out because that's absolutely hilarious.
Coming back to Lampard, maybe I could think like, you know, they're bringing him back. They want to bring someone who's a club legend who can get them passionate about the team and going forward. But you're bringing in a guy who failed at being the Chelsea manager.
He succeeded in keeping Everton up, though. That's why they're bringing him in. They're worried about
relegation. Now. Yeah, because he's going to get fucking relegated.
That's what they're worried about.
He succeeded in keeping Everton up, but he's going to relegate Chelsea. So yeah. Where's the real success here? Just
poorly run.
Todd Boehly should be sent to Alcatraz, dude, for mismanagement of the football club. Because if I were a Chelsea fan right now, with everything that's going on, I would be trying to burn. What's their training ground called? Almost said Compton, but it's definitely not called Compton.
Did you pull Compton?
it is something similar. Hold on, I know it's something similar. Cobham. Okay. It's kind of similar to Compton.
They're similar, but they're so different.
In name, not in actuality, but just in name. It sounds similar. Okay.
If they get relegated, their preseason tour might be in Compton.
Yeah, that's kind of true. But no, I'm saying if I was a Chelsea fan right now, the way things are going, I would go to burn Cobham to the ground because. Wow. Also, other than Chelsea, I just want to give a slight shout out to a team that have come out of absolutely nowhere and currently sits 6th in the table, by the way, is Unai Emery's Aston Villa.
Good evening
for them indeed. They've been putting together some great results. And yeah, they've played more games than most of the teams behind them. But still, I mean, to sit in 6th right now with the way the season started for them, I mean, they were comfortably like 11th, 12th, bottom half. Upper bottom half type situation, and now to sit in the European place is really just a great achievement for Unai Emery. So, yeah, I mean, good shout out to Villa. Does anyone have any points they would like to address before we wrap it up?
Haaland scored a bike scissor thingy.
Yes, and now is, what is he, 3 goals away from breaking the one season record? Yeah.
Or I think from tying it.
Yeah, it is tying because Salah had 34. And then I think there are players that have had 36, but it was when the Prem was 42 games. So,
yeah.
Yeah. That's all.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. He's going to break the record.
Yeah, sure. He's definitely going to break it.
He'll break it in, like, next week.
Next week, yeah. Against Leicester. could easily score 5 against Leicester.
I didn't realize.
Redacted.
Yeah.
Maybe next week. Or the week after.
I didn't mean it. Maybe next week, though.
Maybe next week. Oh, that's funny.
Freudian slip.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap it up there. I think Josh has suffered enough. Let's allow him to unsuffer a little bit by talking about something he likes and presenting the Jersey of the Week.
So the Jersey of the Week is also an awful team, but opening day was last week, or like a week and a half ago now, and I have MLB TV, and I've really enjoyed watching baseball. There's games on almost all day, like starting in the afternoons. I like it. And yeah, I even like listened to a few games driving back down from Dallas. And yeah, it was kind of nice to listen to something on the radio. So maybe that's one upside to the championship next season is listening to the radio broadcast. Maybe. So I have the Oakland Athletics, who are one of the biggest jokes of a franchise now. They get less attendance than their AAA minor league team. And are probably going to move to Las Vegas in the next 5 years. But no, it was only like $70. So I'd be kind of happy if they moved to Vegas. I don't really have a favorite MLB team right now. I'm still just watching and trying to see who I like. But I've watched a lot of their games just because I bought the jersey, and they are awful.
If I was from Oakland, y'all
on, sorry, you go ahead.
I was going to say, if I was from Oakland, I would be sending shooters to Las Vegas right now because that would be two franchises in a row that moved from Oakland to Las Vegas.
Then shooters.
They got them there.
That's why I said that. They got them in Oakland.
Dude. I'm on my way.
They got them. Sorry, Reese. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I don't watch MLB, but I got to put y'all on something that I do watch, and that is a
Mario
Baseball League that I am extremely invested in. It is so great. It's so fun to watch.
Okay. I have actually something to add before we go again, or Ethan does his record. So those of you, if you're like a foreign listener who's not from the U.S., the minor league system for baseball is absolutely ridiculous. One of the most ridiculous normal mascots without their special fan nights is the Amarillo Sod Poodles, which is like a fancy, not really fancy, it's a hick way of, a Western hick way of saying like a prairie dog.
Let's go, West Texas, baby. Shout out to West Texas.
For like 7 games this season, they are the Amarillo Calf Fries, which for those of you who don't know, that is a deep fried bull's testicle. The logo is, I'm going to send it to Ethan and ask Ethan to put it on screen for this. It's the logo is literally a cow submersing itself into a vat of deep fried oil. It is the most ridiculous.
What is his face look like? Is he like in pain, or is he kind of like, you know?
He's got like a,
he's kind of like shocked into it. Face.
I don't know if he's into it.
Why is he shocked that he's doing it himself?
I don't think he wants it to happen.
Or does he? He's literally lowering himself.
What the heck? What is this? Amarillo
Calf Fries. Show it on the screen, Ethan.
Oh, he's into it.
That's me, bro.
What?
What?
Ethan wants the album of the week. Change subject.
Yeah, I mean, he looks embarrassed. I'd be embarrassed too.
He's like, what have I done?
You know that TikTok audio that's like, as you can see, your balls have been coated in like bread and butter or something, and there's a KFC deep fryer before you or something like that.
No, it's
like
the
have not.
It's like the saw face, and it's like, as you can see, your
balls. Oh, yes, I have actually.
Yeah. But anyway, that's what that reminded me of.
Oh god.
Okay, yeah, album of the week, please.
What a story. Well, what's the story
Morning Glory.
Oh, wow. What a segue.
So a long time ago, I picked Oasis in their first album. And I picked that one because I think it's my fifth favorite album of all time. I have not been able to find this album for so long, and I wanted to buy it in stores. During spring break, I found it. And after listening to it enough, I ended up figuring out that this is my favorite album of all time. So it's kind of a revelation that I'm able to put it up on a joyous podcast for me, at least. So this is, it just matches the vibe. So great album, bunch of great songs, ends on one of the best songs ever. And it's like a big swan song. So definitely check it out. I'm sure all the English people are well aware of the Gallagher brothers. So they know, already know. And so
Oasis is one of those bands that is like ubiquitous in England, but never really made it to the States. Like,
right.
They never really got, other than like Wonderwall,
but obviously.
Yeah. But other than that, like, they never really made it to the States.
And the funny thing
being big.
Yeah. And the funny thing is that, as much as Wonderwall is a great song, a lot of their songs just don't sound like that.
No.
A lot of them are actual like rock songs, electric guitar and stuff like that. So, but they're great. I love them. They've been my band recently.
And they're also, well, at least Noel, they both are, aren't they? Really big football fans as well.
They're like, both big,
constantly tweeting about it. Fans.
Yeah.
So they were OG City fans though, before the takeover, obviously.
Yeah. They're from Manchester. So
yeah.
But
yeah,
they're great.
Okay. Before we end the show, I want to just do a quick segment on the NHL. Cause we do every once in a while when playoffs start to come around, we do like to do a little bit of Dallas Stars talk here for the three of us that are Stars fans. The Stars have, of course, clinched a playoff spot. We don't know who we're going to play yet. It could be any of the Avalanche, the Wild, or the Kraken, depending on where we finish in the division. But I really hope it's not the Avalanche. Because we're going to have to play them, but I just don't want it to be in the first round. So, yeah, shout out to the Stars. Shout out to Jason Robertson, first ever Dallas Star to have a 100-point season. Some guys did it for the North Stars back when the franchise was in Minnesota, but nobody's ever done it in Dallas, and he's the first guy to do it. So shout out to him. Still going.
I'll put this in y'all's minds. Now that we've qualified for the playoffs officially, we should look at tickets.
Buddy, I'm going to a playoff game, no doubt. Like, I'm going to be there. It's that meme, the I will be there no matter what.
Yeah.
The Kylian Mbappe. That's me about the playoffs.
When they drop the schedule, I think it's supposed to start. I think playoffs start next Monday.
They do. Yeah, the 17th. Yeah, so. Well, the real problem is the Stars probably won't know their opponent until the last day of the season, which is the 13th. Actually, it's the 14th because the Avs play on the 14th. So the Stars may not know their opponent until then. But whenever it actually comes out, we should look into buying tickets. So, yeah. And then I'm trying to think of what else. The Bruins actually today just set the record for most wins in an NHL season ever, which is absolutely insane considering nobody thought they were going to be good this season. And they just had their 63rd win. If they win any of their last two games or lose them both in overtime for some reason, they will break the record for the most points in a season also, which is crazy. The record is 132. They're currently on 131.
It's crazy, but it's also like, because they used to not have overtime loss points.
Well, you say that, but the team that holds the record, or the team that's like 1 point off the record right now, is the Lightning from a couple years ago. So, yeah,
sure.
But you're right. The team that actually holds the record is the 77 Canadians, which was the first of their four consecutive Stanley Cups in the late 70s. So. Mm-hmm. I might've been the second actually, but anyway, yeah, Bruins are probably going to break that record, points record and wins record, which is absolutely nuts. And I still kind of think they might lose in the first round just because it would be hilarious because Tampa lost in the first round when they had 130 points. So just keep your eyes out on that. Couple other notes from around the league. Connor McDavid became the sixth player in history to have a 150-point season. The guy's an absolute joke. He scored 60. He's working on 65 right now. I'm going to go ahead and go on record and say if, and it's a big if given what team he plays for, if he wins the Stanley Cup, I think like he won't ever beat Gretzky's point numbers, but honestly, I think he might be the best player that's ever played in the NHL.
Like, I think it will depend on if you, how many cups he wins.
He's not going to win more than Gretzky because Gretzky won, what, 5 with the Oilers? Yeah. So
it's so funny to me because I pretty much only watch the Dallas Stars games, and Miro is apparently the McDavid Slayer. So, like, I hear you talk about how great he is all the time, and you'll, like, send me clips and stuff, but every time we play them, he's just in Miro's pocket literally every time. So, like, I don't have this, like, I don't know. I don't ever get to see the others of the other side.
You should watch some Oilers games in the playoffs this season because it's going to be fun. And he's so good. Like, he's just astronomically good. It just sucks that the team around him is trash, except for Draisaitl. But
other news, the Hughes brothers are probably going to get to play each other at some point in the next week because Michigan lost in the semifinal of the Frozen Four, so he got to come early.
And Luke just signed his contract like yesterday morning, I think. Signed his first pro deal. So him and Jack are going to get to play together in the playoffs probably because, I mean, he is an absolute weapon. I can't believe that family produced 3 first-round draft picks that are all like NHL. They're all about to be NHL regulars. That's absolutely nuts.
The Frozen Four was crazy. Championship game was wild.
Yeah, Quinnipiac with a OT winner 10 seconds into overtime to win the Frozen Four.
It was a weird goal, too. Like, the goal got ran over by his own player, but Quinnipiac have been so close for a lot of different times, and they used to be awful. So, it's a first-time championship, which is always cool to see.
Yeah, I think they were in what – I think it's, like, 2 of the last 5 finals they were in, plus this one.
Yeah.
So, good to see them finally get a win under their belts. So, weirdly, like, not a lot of players from that team are touted to end up in the NHL. It's just a really cohesive team, I guess. Because you look at Michigan and like 90% of the roster has been drafted and most of them are – I mean, Fantilli's going to go 2nd overall this year. Like, so they have some great players, but just, you know, they weren't able to get it done this year. So it's interesting to see how that pans out.
This year's draft is insane. Probably the top 5 are all probably going to be like superstars.
Yeah, they're all like ready-made NHLers. Like Bedard could easily put up 100 points as a rookie. Just
maybe.
Dude, have you seen his junior numbers? Like I know it's
but he also plays in the Western, which I think he's still gonna be really good, but I think it semi skews it.
I know it's the weakest junior league. Actually the Q is probably the weakest
junior league. The Q doesn't count anymore. Yeah,
they banned fighting in the Q, so fuck the Q. But
Reese, you look so confused.
Just spaced out for a second. you lost me. After you move on, after you move away from Stars, I'm just like,
yeah.
Okay, well, that's good enough time. It's good enough time to end the show, I would say. So let's go ahead and wrap it up. I want to say thanks to Josh for coming on again. Thanks, Josh. Thanks to Reese for coming back and rejoining us. It's always nice to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for continuing to host for us.
Of course. And Ethan as well. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. I enjoyed talking about this week. You all know why. Here's hoping that we all have better fortunes.
And of course, thank you to the listener for tuning in and sticking with us for all this time. We wish you well. We hope you're enjoying the Premier League. We hope you stay safe, stay healthy. It's a goodbye from us.